Blog Talk Radio.
Tony Family Cat.
And you must be watching the Phillies game. No, the Eagles game.
Yeah. Phillies are off. But 9-1 on the road trip. I know that impresses you.
Yes. I love it. As long as the Yankees.
And there was a bench clearing brawl. Nothing like a good bench clearing brawl.
Saw that. Victorino getting a little trouble there.
Yeah, that was bullshit. I mean, they were whining because they were getting their ass kicked in front of their home crowd, so they plunked the guy. And Victorino had every right to go out and want to kick the guy's ass. And I wanted to know where all during this fracas was. I didn't see Tim Lincecum or what's the guy with the big-ass beard, Brian Wilson. Because what would have happened was one of the ball girls would have ran out and kicked the crap out of Tim Lincecum. And if I was there, the first thing I would have done is I would have grabbed Brian Wilson by the beard and start yanking it.
All right.
Then I would have got Brutus Barber Beefcake to put him in a sleeper hold and shave it off.
Was Brutus Barber an actual barber? I didn't know that.
I don't think so. You know, you mean the shitty thing about the whole thing was, I think Brutus Barber Beefcake was actually from San Francisco. Damn.
Well,
be on the other side.
Philly's having a good year this year in sports. As far as baseball and football go, anyway, geez, they just got another couple guys in the last week. Ronnie Brown they picked up, and Steve Smith the other day. He must be psyched.
I'm telling you, man. I think you guys are happy to get rid of Ronnie Brown because he always used to kill the Patriots. Remember that first year they brought in that Wildcat?
Yeah, he's definitely some needed talent for the Phillies. I mean, for the Eagles. I keep calling them the Phillies. But the Patriots, I don't know. They went out and got a couple good guys early, but they've been slow to pick up the pace and get more guys. They definitely need some linebackers, and they've only gotten one guy so far from free agency.
Well, talking about linebackers, I mean, that's where the Eagles are the weakest because, I mean, in linebackers, they got three guys that are projected to start. I think have a combined 9 starts between them.
Jeez.
And most of them come from, like, one guy.
Mm-hmm.
So they got that Clay Matthews from the Packers. They got his younger brother. They drafted him this year. And they're like, well, they're like, don't compare him to his brother. Well, no shit, his brother's awesome. I mean, if he passes his brother, I think we're all going to be happy.
Well, as far as combat sports go, we got tons to talk about, so I want to spend the whole time talking about football and the night of the preseason.
And baseball.
And baseball, yes. Well, I would like to congratulate the Red Sox on winning 2 out of 3 against the Yanks. But there was some good boxing news in the pipeline this week. Of course, I don't know if you get to see it, but they had the same name show on Mike Tyson on this past Sunday.
Oh, no, I didn't get to see it.
It was awesome, really.
Was it?
It really opened my eyes to the new Tyson. And I think it was actually a little better doing that than the whole documentary on Tyson where he sat and talked for 2 hours there. It's a little bit more recent, of course, and it also, you know, shows his funny side, because there's one point where he's at the dinner table with the different wife there of the other guy, and they're talking, and he says, "You must have heard every Mike Tyson joke in the book." And she says, "Yeah, people always ask me when I tell them I'm married to Mike Tyson, they always say, 'Can I check your ears?'" That's the one joke in the whole show you'd think he'd take offense to. And, like, it shows the space change a little bit, but then he just starts chuckling. So he's definitely a different guy.
You know what? Seeing Mike Tyson over the recent years, watching that documentary Tyson that came out, I think he finally, realized, I think, later in his career and as his life is progressing, you know, he's not that angry 20-something-year-old that he was for so long. And I don't think he's – he had periods in his 30s where he was kind of out of control, too. And he really started mellowing as he got to his 40s. I remember his last fight when he lost to Kevin McBride, which I do want to touch upon in a minute anyway. I remember him saying, like, in the interview, he's like, "I don't want to do this no more." He's like, "I don't got the heart for this no more." And you could tell, like, that rage that carried him for so long was gone. And when he broke down at his Hall of Fame speech this year, you could tell that all of that emotion that he bottled up for so long is really not there anymore.
Yeah. Well, he had mentioned on the show, too, that the death of his daughter, Exodus, there. He didn't really talk about it or even say her name, but he's, you know, you could tell that's what he's talking about. She had a freak accident on the treadmill. She had a cord.
Right. Yeah, basically hung herself almost.
He said that really changed him down to earth.
Even Ring Magazine said. Even Ring Magazine said right after that happened and that issue came out, and they were giving him condolences, and they said, you know, the one thing they always say is, like, well, when you lose a child, you know, your heart breaks and can never really fully be repaired. They said there's something in there that breaks that you will never get back.
Right. But he definitely has a nice house. He was a little miffed when he got introduced to his new room at the smaller house there, and he had just handed off his nice huge bedroom with a giant bed to the other Mike Tyson, and he gets this new house, and they're like, and he's like, "Where's the bed?" The couch pulled out. You got to pull the couch out. It becomes a bed. You know, he wasn't familiar with the pull-out couch situation. It's been a while for him since he had to sleep on one of those, I guess. But it was a great show. He donated some furniture and stuff to the clinic that they had him working at as a nurse. And they also threw the bigger guy. It's hard to believe that there's a bigger Mike Tyson. But he's the guy that he took the place of, who came out to Vegas to live in his house, also had to fight Haseem Rahman in a two-round charity fight. So they threw him in the ring with him. And he actually did all right. They supposedly called it a draw, even though Rahman kicked his ass, but for his size, you know, being so fat and out of shape, the guy did all right. He made himself proud, and people were actually asking for his autograph afterwards. So that was kind of funny. Little kids, mostly, of course. But, yeah.
Actually, you know, I want to just quickly change the topic. I just looked at it just a short while ago from one of our previous guests. Remember a few, months ago, we had Eric Gargoglio on the show. He does a lot of professional wrestling writing that I actually, we have mutual friends. Well, right after, we did the show, he and I became Facebook friends, and, so I get to read a lot of his posts. And one he wrote on there was called Top 10. Obviously WWE. And one thing he mentioned on there, and I'm going to have it open right now, was they gave the top SummerSlam moment to a match that involved Bret Hart. And when Bret Hart and WWE were still pretty much on the out. And the one thing he said was, give WWE credit because the relationship between them and Bret Hart is not one of the greatest. To put him number one shows the authenticity of this list, as opposed to a UFC / Dana White, who left Frank Shamrock, Tito Ortiz, and several others off of their recent top 100 fight list.
Well, speaking of Tito Ortiz, he had a pretty tough loss this past weekend. He got his ass kicked by Rashad Evans in the main event there. And, he actually did fight okay. He had him Rashad at one point in a guillotine choke attempt, but Rashad ended up popping out of it, and he insisted after the fight he never really was in trouble. He had trained for that. But it was a good fight. It's just definitely not as bad as a beating as it could have been for Ortiz. And he's going to end up sticking around, I think, because he didn't really do all that bad. He actually went into the second round in the fight. He did take the fight on short notice, so he didn't really have that much time to prepare for Rashad. So it's not like he's going to get thrown out. It looked actually like Dana White, as soon as he came in the cage after the fight, went over to Tito and probably said something to the effect of, "Don't worry, you're not going to get thrown out." But I'll tell you, the only guy who did so bad, and it had nothing to do with his performance in the cage, but there was only one guy who really had any chance of being thrown out after this card, and it was Dennis Hallman came in, and apparently there was a bet made that he lost because he had to come in with Speedos on. And Peter White was pissed, so pissed he gave the winner of that.
Yeah, I saw the next day on AOL, it even had a blurb about that.
Yeah, and I mean, the shorts barely had room for him to put, the name of a sponsor on the back, and I think they had something on the front there, too, but I wasn't looking, that's for sure. Ebersol kicked his ass. He knocked him out with elbows in the first round, and he actually got like a $70,000 bonus for winning. And it wasn't a knockout win or bonus or whatever. It was specifically for the shorts because he didn't want the guy with those shorts to win this fight. And Dana admitted that, so that's interesting. But apparently, it also sparked White saying, "Now that there's gonna be a strict dress code that will never allow that again." He was really like unnaturally pissed off about it. I didn't see the big deal. I thought it was kind of funny. I'm sure a lot of people thought, no big deal. But Dana White was livid. Like, he was seriously considering throwing the guy out for it, but he did say that if it was anything that the guy would be thrown out for, it'd be his performance. But, for the short time it did last, the fight was sort of competitive, so I guess he couldn't really throw him out for his performance. But also in that
It's hard to say. I can see where the sword is, there's a double-edged sword involved in that. In boxing, for years, you had your traditional boxing trunks. And then you had guys like Jorge. I mean, then you had a couple guys that had a little bit last year. Then I know it got crazy with guys like Hector Camacho and Jorge Paez. I mean, they had, I mean, God knows what on. And Camacho basically had with a glorified loin skirt. And then other guys have them trunks now where they look almost like, not pool skirts, but you know what I mean. And I don't know. I could never really get into that. Okay, in boxing, yeah, it's a different story. I mean, obviously, you're going to have either spandex underneath and you're going to have your, you know, protective cuff underneath. In UFC, where, you know, they have obviously less gear on, I mean, I could see something like that. Next thing you know, you're getting a rated X show.
Yeah.
And even being his opponent, you know, this is a guy like Hector Camacho, and he's wearing a loincloth. Okay, fine, he's wearing a loincloth. You know, you're basically moving around and punching each other. In UFC, I mean, there's a lot of grappling involved in that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, not to sound homophobic, but that would make me just uncomfortable. Maybe that was his game plan.
Either way, it got blown up so badly. It just made Dana White look like a freak, you know, like... Yeah, it's very, very unnatural for him to be that upset about it. I just thought, you know, it was a little bit ridiculous. You know, like, he was pissed not only at the guy for wearing them, but the people that let him go out there like that. And, you know, there's obviously, he admitted as well that there was no formal dress code that would forbid that, but at the same time, he's still pissed at the staff that let the guy out there looking like that. So, I don't know. I don't know what's... major malfunction is, but I just thought that was kind of funny. We also had a couple other notable fights on the card. Mike Brown had a really good resilient performance against Nan Phan. He won by decision. And he roughed him up pretty good in the first round. Phan did all right trying to come back in the next two rounds, but he just didn't do enough. We had Rafael Natal beat Paul Bradley by unanimous decision, and most of the fights actually ended by decision. So it was, and there's absolutely no submissions. It was all either decision or knockouts. We also had Johnny Hendricks beat Mike Pierce by a split decision. Ivan Menjivar beat Nick Pace by unanimous decision. Chad Mendez beat Ronnie Yaha by decision, also unanimous. And then a big surprise, we had Alexander Gustafsson, a relative newcomer to the UFC, beat out Matt Hamill by TKO in the second round. And Matt Hamill actually retired. It's his second fight and loss in a row. And he retired after the fight, which surprised a lot of people. But he's got a documentary movie coming out about his life. And like I said, he lost two in a row, so... I guess that was enough for him. And people are talking about he should be a real representative of the UFC in the future for the deaf community, an ambassador of sorts. So maybe they can find a position for him like they did for Chuck Liddell, the VP or something, because he is very well known for being the only deaf fighter in MMA, really, that I know of. I don't know if there's probably another one either here or there, but... He's definitely the only deaf one in the UFC. We also had Rory McDonald beat Mike Pyle by first-round TKO due to punches. Constantino Filippu beat the hometown guy there, Jorge Rivera, by split decision. It was kind of a back-and-forth fight there. I really enjoyed watching it. I thought Rivera did pretty well for himself and made it pretty clear that he's got a lot left in the tank, so they're not going to throw him out for losing that one. And, of course, we had Vitor Belfort come back and really put an exclamation point on the fact that he still got his hands left there. He got a first-round knockout of Yoshihiro Akiyama. And, really, this is probably the only fight in the whole card that would have led anybody to believe the loser should get released. But Dana White has actually been telling Yoshihiro Akiyama that he would be great at 170 pounds, and he should make the weight cut down there. So we might see him do that to stick around, but he hasn't been thrown out officially, anyway. And a guy that we talked about last week, Alistair Overeem, is back in the news now that there's a little controversy with Golden Glory. We had a couple interviews where he talked, and actually his management is now saying that he's willing to sign an exclusive deal with the UFC. So we might see him back with that organization, but there would have to be a lot of money, I think. But there was an interesting side note to the whole story, because they were talking about how just before Zuffa, the UFC parent company, purchased Strike Force, the Golden Glory people had introduced Scott Coker, the CEO of Strike Force, to some connections of his in the business world, some very big connections in the United States. And this was just before when I don't even think Coker knew about the UFC's interest in Strikeforce and buying them out. And apparently that might be the changes that they came up with because of this meeting, I guess, might be the reason why the whole feud between Golden Glory and the UFC even came up, because of the way business was being done by Strikeforce that might have been inspired by this Golden Glory company putting two and two together and helping them out and putting them in a different direction, I guess. I don't know. They didn't really get too elaborate on the explanation, but I'd be interested in finding out more about that. Pro Elite is back with talks about a TV deal. Their general manager or CEO or whatever it is, the head honcho there, apparently is trying to quash these rumors. But there was news this week that they're going to be on Showtime and CBS instead of the UFC and Strikeforce after Strikeforce's contract runs out with CBS or with Showtime. And apparently it makes sense, because Pro Elite is actually was a penny stock forever, and Viacom, which is the parent company of CBS and CBS and Showtime, actually has around 12 million shares in Pro Elite. And back when it was the parent company of Elite XC, the first fights ever on Showtime under an MMA banner, it was trading at around $15 a share at its height. So if they got those shares for, you know, a few pennies each, and they bring it up to back over $15 a share at some point by making this TV deal happen in the future, that would be huge for them. And they would just be basically making their own luck. So I believe it, but I think they're backtracking because they haven't even had their first real recovered entity event under the new banner. So that's going to happen August 27th. So I'm keeping an eye on that situation. But I bet when they get some steam under them, that will happen. They will do that, some kind of deal there, and use those connections to their advantage. Also, this past weekend, I got to meet Randy Couture, finally, out here in Vegas at his gym. I'd mention that because I also went to the had a big grappling tournament at his gym. So I went out there, watched a few of the rounds of the grappling tournament. They even had a setup called the Absolutes, where they had guys that could be any weight class who would get into the Absolute tournament after they had their regular rounds against guys in their own weight. And so they had a couple of little guys fighting huge guys, back like the old UFC used to be, where they didn't worry about weight classes. Anybody could fight anybody. So that was interesting. But probably the most interesting aspect of the whole thing was there was a guy with one leg who won every match that I saw him grappling. And this is the first time I'd ever been to a grappling event. you know, being a wrestler in high school, a lot of that stuff is familiar. It's a lot of the same things, but there's a lot of differences too. And there is a one-legged wrestler named Anthony Robles who just finished his senior year. And he went undefeated, I think he was like 36-0. And I had heard about him, but I never actually saw him wrestle a full match. So seeing this kid get in there and grapple with just one leg, he was a smaller guy. It was very impressive, you know. Kid definitely had somewhat of an advantage, I thought. But he definitely also had a lot of skills, so that was definitely a good little bit of experience to get. There's some other boxing news regarding Arturo Gatti. I know I sent you a little
story. I looked at that, and I'm waiting for August 30th. That's when they're going to announce the findings, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, they're going to have a press conference to talk about the findings of a private investigator who looked at the whole situation. The one sticking point for a lot of people appears to be, you know, if his wife did kill him, how was she able to lift him up, string him up the way she did? And, you know, I would say never underestimate a woman and her strength.
Well, I mean, okay, Amanda Rodriguez is not a big girl, obviously. I mean, it's hard for her to, you know, it's hard to say, you know, exactly how big, you know, she was. I mean, I've never seen her live. I've never seen her in person. When you look at it along the other lines, is Arturo is not a 200-plus pound guy. You're not talking like you're lifting up, James Toney here. You're not talking like you're lifting up Vladimir Klitschko. You're not lifting up, Butterbean. Arturo, at his fighting weight, was 140 pounds. Now, obviously, he's having trouble making 140 pounds. So let's add 35 pounds to that. Let's give 35 pounds. 175 pounds. Okay. It's not impossible. Let's put it that way.
You have to also consider the circumstances of that day, too. Not only was Arturo obviously drinking a lot, but I think somebody threw a bike at him even, and some rocks, when they had their fight.
Yeah, that's how he got the upside. Because originally they said there were cuts on his head, and that's what they thought he was stabbed, you know. Then they said no. The Brazilian police said no, that wasn't it. It was a cut from somebody throwing a rock at him. Okay.
So if he'd come home drunk, you know, she probably could have got him to stand on a chair or wherever they found him and then got behind him and choked him that way. Who knows? I mean, you know.
Let me ask you this. How hard is it to differentiate a cut coming from a rock that was thrown at you as opposed to a puncture wound with a sharp object? I don't see them being similar at all.
Nope. But basically, the private investigator says that there's no way Gatti could have killed himself in that situation. And they're convinced that she did it. But coming from Brazil herself, and obviously, you know, being the fact that there was, I think, over $1 million in his estate, I'm sure this could have been a bribe paid or, you know, something that would have convinced the Brazilian authorities to let her go with a little persuasion on her part. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think their police force there is genuinely known for those type of investigations. I don't know how much resources they have to do those sort of investigations either. So I doubt that they put really enough work into figuring out what really happened. what this this private investigator supposedly. There's a lot to say. He's got a press conference coming up, but the news has been going around. We also had a little discussion last week about the bare-knuckle boxing match between Bobby Gunn and the MMA guy. Bobby Gunn won. I don't have the
MMA guy.
Oh, trick. What?
What MMA guy?
His opponent was a guy who had MMA and boxing experience.
With Brazil, right?
I think it was Charles something. I forget.
Oh,
maybe you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know Rich Stewart. Remember, I told you at the time I was at the fight card, the Blue Horizon, and the one fighter came into the audience and beat the shit out of a fan.
Okay.
And I stopped him.
Mm-hmm.
I told you about that, right?
Yep.
Rich Stewart.
Well. Another boxing news. Here's a good story. Michael Irving says Floyd Mayweather is making brothers look bad. And,
yeah, well.
Because he's ducking Pacquiao, he says. And it's not surprising because Michael Irving is obviously a former Cowboy player. And he's still good friends with Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, and Manny Pacquiao. When he couldn't get the fight done with Floyd the first time, ended up embracing the chance to fight at Cowboy Stadium, the new stadium there. That's probably better suited for boxing matches than it is for football games. Their team sucks now.
I enjoy the fucking team, Chuck. But I've heard hosting football games are difficult. I knew a few people that went to that stadium, and what they were saying about it is, you know, the scoreboard is too damn big. It's like 1 million pounds, and people hit it with the pump, and that's not what falls. You're looking at a tragedy. You're looking at a catastrophe.
Yeah. But, Michael Irvin, he's a real big fan of boxing. He likes Manny Pacquiao, but basically said that Floyd Mayweather makes brothers look bad. And by brothers, he means black.
You know what a partner of mine said? One of my African-American co-workers months ago said this to me. He goes, Floyd don't want none of that. And I said, from a black guy saying it, is that another brother? I said, ooh, man. I said, your own people are going against you now.
Yeah, right.
Now, I got one guy that I know that he lives and dies on Floyd Mayweather. I mean, he calls Pacquiao a cheater, and I'll say to him, I'm like, what evidence do you have? Why can you say that, you know, matter-of-factly, with no evidence? And he won't answer that question. Well, it points to it. Pacquiao got knocked out twice early in his career. But I'm trying to say, Bernard Hopkins lost his first pro fight by decision, but I'm trying to remember what fighter it was that knocked out in his pro debut. I mean, knocked out, and then went on and won like 40-some straight fights or something. Something ridiculous like that. World title. I couldn't remember who it was, but, you know, you're good. But he got knocked out twice in his career at, he was at 108 pounds. But in his career, you know, maybe he was content to make weight. Maybe he didn't train. Maybe he was a young guy fighting a much older, much more experienced fighter. It happened. I got stopped in my first fight against a guy that if I would have fought him a year or so later, I would have mopped the floor with him, tossed him out of the ring, and invited his coach in. But he stopped me in my first fight. He was 6 years older than me. He was 4 years older. He was about 6 inches taller. Much longer arms. He was in better shape. He had boxed a little bit before. I didn't. I was basically a glorified street brawler with gloves. And I got stopped. I said, if I would have fought him again, I would. And I had him hurt the first round before I ran out of gas. So this guy was going, oh, yeah. He's on steroids. I said, how can you prove it? You're an attorney. You're an attorney, and you're basically defaming somebody's character. more than anybody, that is an offensive. I mean, I'm sure that Manny's not coming to that and saying, I'm going to sue this guy, you know, for that. He's not going to waste his time. He's going to sue somebody like the Mayweathers. But at the same time, you know, the guy will basically worship Floyd and worship Roger. Roger's the biggest piece of shit in the world. Roger's like Osama bin Laden with a boxing jacket on.
Man, you really don't like that guy.
I cannot stand him.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's still going to be talk about these guys until they fight, but that whole defamation case, like I said, is kind of overlooked a lot, but it wouldn't have even lasted this long if there wasn't some merit to it on Manny's part. He did release or settle with some of the parties on one end of it, but Floyd's still on the hook. I think his father's still on the hook. I don't know if Roger's involved. I forget. Wouldn't surprise me. But as far as performance-enhancing drugs, I mean, I just don't think Manny would need to do that. You know?
I think part of the reason that people are accusing Manny of doing the performance-enhancing drugs is the fact that he went from a very good fighter to a great fighter. But a lot of that, I also went from a guy starting at 105 pounds or 108 pounds to a guy that's now a rock solid 145 pounds.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously that has a lot to do with it. You know, this guy's...
I mean, it'd be one thing if they had, like, a guy from Balco or something that was associated with him, like, you know, Alex Rodriguez had issues with in baseball. You know, but they don't. There's not a shred of evidence that shows this guy is even associating with anybody that could have anything to do with any
exactly.
type of steroids.
I mean, I know a lot of guys like to use the performance-enhancing drugs as kind of like a cop-out. It's a cop-out because I don't like you. It's a cop-out because I want to make you look like the bad guy and me look like the good guy. But, I mean, Rich, I mean, you see fighters all the time. I mean, you look at a guy, Grant Hopkins. He moved up from 160 to 175. It was part of the fact he couldn't make 160 anymore. He was starting to really have trouble making the weight. You look at other guys that have climbed up weight classes. Lloyd sure has climbed up a lot of classes. He started at 130. He's fighting 154. That's 20-some pounds. Look at a guy like Tommy Hearns. Tommy Hearns went from 147 up to 190 over the course of his career. That's a good 45 pounds. And those are bigger guys. So when you get a guy like Manny Pacquiao, okay, he's a smaller guy. Okay, fine. Roy Jones. Started his career at 154, won his first title at 160. His highest weight, I think, was 193, I think it was. Or something similar to that, or maybe 195. That's still a good 40-some pounds. So when you get a guy that's, you know, obviously starting to train, he's filling out, and he's becoming bigger, you rarely see guys, as they get older, move down in weight class. You don't see a guy like, Manny Pacquiao saying, you know, okay, I've been fighting my whole career at 154 and 160. Yeah, I think I'm going to get down to 140 now. You don't see guys progressively move up. They get bigger.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, he's coming out, he's getting bigger. And I think part of the reason, maybe he did lose fights early in his career. He wasn't obviously trained as well as he is now. And he's obviously improving as a fighter. He's getting in better condition. He's physically getting stronger. Yes, he does do a weight program where he does, you know, build his muscles up.
Yeah, and he's got all kinds of professionals working with him on conditioning alone, you know. So I think that has a lot more to do with it than anything. And of course, Freddie Roach, can't overlook what he's done for him. He's now coaching, training with the Olympic hopefuls. That whole qualifying circuit just actually ended, I think. I've seen a lot of links on the boxing links I put up every day on different guys who have gotten through there. Have you heard this news that they're actually trying to kind of blur the line between amateur and professional boxing? completely now. They've got all these amateur changes they want to make, and they want to have, by the time the 2016 Olympics come around, they want to have pros be eligible.
I do know about that. I mean, I'd probably say no to it. I mean, okay, take a look at the guy. Okay, maybe, okay, let's use Floyd Mayweather as an example, because Floyd was an Olympic bronze medalist in 1996. So now it's a chance, you know, 16 or so years later, for him to finally get that gold medal that he, you know, felt that he deserved. But it's a different style of fighting. Now imagine, you're undefeated, 41-0 as a professional. You go back in the quote-unquote amateur ranks in the Olympics, and you lose on one of those bogus point systems. That's going to hurt your career more than that gold medal would help it. I mean, you agree with me there?
Yeah, I just kind of thought it's weird that they would come up and, hey, if there's any time to even suggest that, it would be, you know, right after the Drake team situation, you know, and basketball.
I mean, everybody knows all about the Dream Team and basketball. They started that in, what was it, 1992, I think it was, with Larry Bird and Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, Charles Barkley, all, you know, the great NBA players. And then that first year, I mean, they were manhandling guys. I mean, they were great. But didn't they do a Dream Team, like, either at the last Olympics or the Olympics before, that was more of a nightmare? That they were getting routed. They lost to the fucking Puerto Ricans, of all people. You know, they lost to a Puerto Rican basketball team. Because, you know, a different style of play. You know, you're doing a lot of these European styles now, which, you know, is not that a hot shot, you know, street ball. It's, you know, very traditional basketball, you know, with emphasis on passing, emphasis on, you know, defense, and a lot of these hot shots didn't want to do it. Look at the Miracle on Ice, the 1980 U.S. Men's hockey team that won the gold medal by beating the unbeatable Soviets. How'd they do it? They had to get a bunch of young kids that were willing to learn a new style. They said, yeah, they could have tried to use a bunch of all-stars out there, professional all-stars, but they were a team like the New York Rangers with a lot of good players on there were playing the Soviets and losing. What would a bunch of all-stars do? Probably the same thing. They had a very tough style of play that you needed to play that style to win. You couldn't play a professional style. Like some pro fighters that would go in the Olympics right now. And so let's just take an example. I'm not going to use Bob Floyd again. I'm going to use I'm trying to think of a fighter that is a good body puncher. Okay, here's an example. Smokey Joe Frazier. Smokey Joe won the Olympics back in 64 because the Olympics at that time was pretty much very much a professional style of boxing. And Joe was a body puncher. He was an aggressive guy. Joe would wear you down. A lot of punches then that counted would not count now. So if you took Joe Frazier from 1964 and brought him to this day and age and you put him in the 2012 Olympics, he'd probably lose in the first round of the tournament because he'd get outpointed by this one guy that would just run and pass and, touch him with these little jabs and count, even though every punch Frazier landed was, like, you know, damn near putting his liver into his throat. So to have pros fighting in the Olympics now, it's a completely different style of fighting. That's why you're seeing a lot of your good amateurs, yeah, they'll go into the Olympic trials, but instead, like, and I'll give you an example of a guy we interviewed about 2 years ago, Danny Garcia out of Philadelphia. I know Danny. Danny's a very good fighter. You know, he was in the Olympic trials, got eliminated, but he had a chance to, you know, go back in as a another seed or go in as an alternate and make the team, and decided to sign with Golden Boy instead. Because he knew that gold medal really wouldn't help out his career that much, and he knew he was better suited to a pro style. And, hey, you know what? Let's make the money. So you ain't going to get the big contracts like the Ray Leonards and the Evander Holyfields and the Riddick Bowes and the David Reeds and the Oscar De La Hoyas made. You're not going to get that anymore.
All right.
I like Andre Ward a lot. I think he's a hell of a fighter. But there was not a whole lot of fanfare for Andre Ward after he won the gold medal. I don't remember a fanfare of anybody from 2004 Olympics at all. At 2008, I don't even remember the guys on the team. I really don't. I can actually tell you probably half of the team from 1996. I can tell you a number of the guys from 1992. I can probably tell you two, maybe three guys from 2000. And I can only tell you two guys from 2004, and those are the Andres, Ward and Durrell. If I rack my brain, I might be able to come up with another one. I think it was Jason Estrada or somebody. But I can't tell you nobody from 2008. I really can't.
Well, the whole thing with boxing, the major difference is it's not like any other sport the way they do their amateurs. You know, it's not like football where the amateurs are pretty much college. It's not like baseball where they have teams for every pro team has a has an amateur team. You know, or multiple different leagues that are amateurs. You know. It's a totally different thing, you know. It's you got college boxers, you've got Golden Gloves boxers, and it really needs the Olympics to just be allowed for amateurs in case, you know, you get people, you know, who just don't want to go pro at any time. They just want to see how far they can get as amateurs. And a lot of people do that, you know. Though I did see a couple stories about guys who, when they didn't make the Olympics, they just decided to go pro. But that's the option that they have, and why not? I don't know. I don't think it's a good idea to add that. But we got to talk about the upcoming boxing schedule here for the pros. We'll talk more about the Olympics when it gets closer, if London doesn't burn down before then. Going nuts over there, those kids. But yeah, it's a pretty good Friday night fight coming up this weekend. Kermit Cetrone is fighting Antoine Smith in the main event, light middleweight fight. And Friday night fights keeps getting bigger and better names, I think. Cetrone's probably one of the biggest names they've had on in a while, except the last time that I got to go to, it was pretty decent names, too, with Edison Miranda and Peterson and Kayo in the main event there. But this one, Kermit Cetrone, he's 32 with 28 knockouts, one draw, fighting Antoine Smith, who's 12 knockouts, one draw. In the co-main event there is Danny Williams at lightweight, 18-1, with 14 knockouts, fighting Antonio Cervantes, who's 16-5 with loss. A lot of draws for a guy. 16-5. 11 knockouts. And the rest of them are all four-rounders. But one of them kind of stands out here. It's got to be somebody related to James Toney. It's a heavyweight fight between Alonzo Toney, who's 3-10, and Todd Brown, who's 3-0, with two knockouts. And I know Toney has a cousin who boxes, because when I was thinking about in Massachusetts at one point, somebody told me that I could spar with James Toney's cousin. So I don't remember his name. I don't remember. We had a fight in Chester, Pennsylvania, on Friday. A couple fights here. Victor Vasquez versus Angel Rios. Is 13-5 with 7 knockouts, 1 draw. Rios is 9-5 with 6 knockouts. We got a 6-round light heavyweight fight between Anthony Ferrante, 11-2 with 6 knockouts, and William Prieto, 5-5. It's not that great a card, but
they're really trying to get this place up and running. I know Jerry Iyer is heavy in Lodgeberry. He's a good guy. He's a quality guy. He's a class act. And hopefully his cards are doing well. Despite the fact that he's such a good guy and he's legitimate about doing things for the sport of boxing. I think he does a lot of these things because he loves the sport so much, instead of other promoters. I'm not going to mention any names that'll put on complete shit cards, have things fall through because they don't want to pay the guys, and then still want to charge the top dollar. I've been to a couple cars like that. I went to a car in Philly about a year or so ago, and there was going to be, I think, $7 card. Total of 19 rounds, and still only charge you like $67. Like, are you kidding me? You're charging me $100 a round.
Well, we also have a decent card on Saturday in Australia, Queensland, Australia. Michael Katsidis is back, lightweight. He's 27-4 with 22 knockouts. He's fighting Michael Lozada, who's 38-8. He's got one draw and 30 knockouts. It's kind of an interesting co-main event, though. This guy's got a funny name. I'm sure it's not pronounced this way, but it reads Jackasses. Jack A-S-I-S is the last name. As is, I guess. Sounds like a military command, like as you were, as is. Jack, as is. He's 23-18, 12, 4 draws. He's fighting Nestor Roca, who's 23-2, with 8 knockouts at light welterweight. That's the top two there. Saturday the 13th. Instead of Friday the 13th. I think it's Saturday. I know David Tua is fighting this weekend, fighting Monty Barrett. And there was a story I read that video that I saw that shows David's actually dim to accommodate more of the MMA guys. And he was practicing his Superman punch on the bag, but they asked him about whether he's ever interested in going to MMA. And pretty much no way, let the young guys try that out on me.
There's no short arms in it to fight in close. You know, he's got to get his throws out of punches. So I wouldn't see him faring much better than James Tony did. He's obviously a better puncher than James Tony. He's more of a pure puncher, especially with his left hook. But he's a guy that doesn't have a heavy work rate. So if the guy's not going to be able to keep other guys off, I'm going to keep guys far away, because he likes to fight in close, so guys would be able to, you know, get down, get around one of them tree trunk legs, get him down for a takeish road. You know, David's a physical guy, he's a strong guy. But you said he was out fighting Ryan Dyer again?
Yes. Supposedly.
They fought through a draw last time. I think Barrett's the first guy to ever score a knockdown on David Till, knocking down like 5 seconds ago in the final round. I remember trying to get him on the show a week or two ago, weren't you?
Yeah, and he was very busy. Keisha was working on it. Making me a greener. Getting ready for her or something, I don't know. Still in the works. We'll see if I can get that on a later date. Well, I would continue with the schedule, but Box Rank is dragging up for me right now. So I'm just going to run a UFC card for this weekend. UFC is going to be live on Versus on site. There's a Strikeforce event too on Friday. Strikeforce Challengers 18. So it's a pretty big MMA weekend. But UFC Live 5. The main event is Dan Hardy versus Chris Lytle. And Dan Hardy's coming off 3 losses in a row. Granted, they were all pretty much pretty well known guys, real tough guys: George St. Pierre, Carlos Condit, and the last one was Anthony Johnson, who we had on the show not too long ago, say a few months ago. But anyway, Hardy fighting Chris Lytle. He's got one tough loss. He's coming off to Brian Ebersole, the guy who beat the pants off the dude in the banana hammock this last weekend. So I think Chris is going to win this one hands down. He's got a really good boxing stance. Chris is actually another former guest of ours. He was the one who said that of all the old rules that he misses most, the headbutt. More often. Of course, can't use it at all now, but he used to like the headbutt. But he's gotten to be a really good boxer. He's got some unique arching punches from the outside. He throws a lot of hooks, a lot of looping uppercuts. And Dan Hardy got knocked the fuck out by Carlos Condit in his fight before the last one. So I think Chris Ladd will be able to do the same thing to him. Might take him a little bit longer because he's not as heavy-handed, but I think Lyle's going to take this one hands down. And we have Jim Miller versus Ben Henderson. Henderson was on a tight win streak in his career before he faced Anthony Pettis, nicknamed Showtime, because he actually, when he was able to actually land the Showtime kick, he calls it, off the cage. That was really went viral after he landed it in the fight against Ben Henderson. Did knock the guy out, but basically he ran up the wall of the cage and then kicked the dude in the face off the cage. So it was pretty impressive. Got a lot of press, got a lot of PR, free PR on YouTube. But the fight went to a decision. Henderson was the title holder. It went all five rounds in the WEC, and Pettis ended up with the title. Now he's waiting. Pettis is waiting in line for a title shot with the winner of Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard, which now has to be rescheduled. Both guys have to pull out due to injuries. It's the last time they're supposed to fight. So now the winner of this fight is going to be waiting in the wings to see who wins the fight between Pettis and whoever wins versus Maynard and Edgar. And interestingly enough, Jim Miller, his only two losses in his whole career, he's 20-2, are against Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar. And he fought Edgar way back in the beginning of his career when he wasn't even in the UFC. But Maynard was a little, it was actually the last fight he lost. He had 7 wins in a row after that fight. I think it was in 2009. I like Jim Miller in this one. He's actually a really good all-around fighter. Yeah, I've seen his last couple fights and really just amazed me how well he's been able to demolish guys in the UFC. And he actually fought another former guest, Kamal Sharus, guy who was showing a lot of promise. And he ended up getting in with a guy like Miller, and Miller just beat the ever-living crap out of him. It was a tough fight, yeah. But Sharus couldn't really get anything done, unfortunately. We also have Dwayne Ludwig versus Amir Sadala. Sadal is one of the Ultimate Fighter winners. Ludwig is more of a journeyman type guy. He's lost 2 out of 3 fights in the UFC, but he's got way more experience than Sadal. And I think Ludwig is going to take this one. And Sadal has actually done a lot of TV stuff for the UFC, so he'll be all right. He'll just do more of that if he loses. We also have Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Charles Oliveira. I don't really know a whole lot about either guy, but I like Cerrone. I know I've heard a lot about him. He used to be in the Ring of Fire circuit, and they always send us press releases. He used to do a lot of main events with them. So he definitely has a lot of experience against some tough guys, and I think he's going to win this one. Another fight's the 8 preliminaries here are all going to be shown on Facebook, so you can watch them there. We have Benavidez versus Eddie Wineland, TJ O'Brien versus Cole Miller, I got Kyle Noak versus Ed Herman, Ronnie Marquez versus Carlos Vemola, Danny Castillo versus Jacob Volkman. Jared Hammond versus C.B. Dalloway. Jim Hedges versus Alex Caceres, also known as Bruce Leroy. We got Jason Reinhardt versus Edwin Figueroa. Bantamweight fight there, rounding it out. So check all those fights out on Facebook, and then the four main events, main card fights will be on versus. And then Strikeforce has Challengers 18 tomorrow night from Las Vegas at the Palms Casino. We got Jorge Gurgel versus Joe Duarte in the main event. Gian Vellante versus Keith Berry. Pat Healy versus Eric Weisley. Ronda Rousey versus Sarah DeLelio. Nate James versus Danilo Villafort. Milton Vieira versus Sterling Ford. Roy Jones. Jones Jr., but Roy Jones versus Derek Memon. Nashawn Burrell versus Lucas Lez. Mike Bronzulis versus Chad Leonhardt. Of course, I really haven't talked much about it, but our guest tonight is Houston Alexander. He's 12-6 in his MMA career. Actually saw him fight at UFC 78, Validation down there in New Jersey in November of 2007. He had a loss to Thiago Silva there. And he had three more UFC fights after that. All of them were losses, unfortunately. But now he's fighting with a new league. And he's coming on at about 9:15 or so. But basically he's going to be fighting another guy who we're going to be interviewing tomorrow. I'm going to be interviewing myself tomorrow afternoon. That'll be up at fnu.mypodcast.com. A guy named Razak Al-Hassan is going to be his opponent in the main event of MMA Fight Pit Genesis, which is happening, I think, on Saturday. I have the date right in front of me. But, it should be an interesting interview. Chatting to him later. Getting back to BoxRec. We got some other fights coming up this weekend, of course. Here's one from Guerrero, Mexico. We got minimum weight, 12-rounder between Juan Palacios, 28-3 with 21 knockouts, fighting Armando Torres, who's 16-8 with 11 knockouts, for the interim WBA World Minimum Weight title. Also have Miguel Roman on that card, a super featherweight fight. He's 34-8 with 26 knockouts, fighting Abraham Rodriguez, who's 23-10. Four draws, 12 knockouts to the Mexico super featherweight title and the WBC FECON Box super featherweight title. And here's David Tua versus Monty Barrett. It's going to be from New Zealand. In Manukau City, New Zealand. It's the main event, 12-round heavyweight fight. Tua is 52-43 knockouts, two draws. He's fighting Barrett, who's 34-9 with 20 knockouts, and two draws. And it's for the WBO Asia Pacific heavyweight title and the WBO Oriental heavyweight title. So wouldn't that be funny if Barrett wins? The Oriental heavyweight title. Nothing really jumping out on the undercard there. Couple 3-6 rounders and a couple 4 rounders. It's just tough to find good fights in New Zealand. Got a pretty interesting female fight from Ignacio, Colorado on Saturday. It's the only fight listed on the card. Got Light welterweights, Layla McCarter, 33-13 with 7 knockouts, 5 draws, fighting Belinda Laraquente, who's 25.5 with 9 knockouts and 3 draws. And we go to Bally's in Atlantic City. Got a fight there on Fox this weekend. Saturday, super bantamweights, Tion Kennedy, 17-11 knockouts, fighting Alejandro Lopez, who's 21-2 with 7 knockouts. That's for the NABA super bantamweight title. And that's really the only fight worth mentioning on that card. Hard Rock Hotel and Casino here in Vegas on Showtime. Joseph Egbeko versus Abner Mares. Finally going to happen.
Who's your pick?
Who's my pick? Well, I have to go with the undefeated guy, Mares. I don't know much about either guy. I didn't really watch much of that. But the IBF Bantamweight title and the WBC Silver Bantamweight title, both on the line in this fight. Egbeko is 28-2 with 22 knockouts. Mares is 21-0 with 13 knockouts. And whoever wins is definitely going to get a lot more title opportunities, I think. You know, going to go far. But it's a partnership, this card, between Don King Productions and Golden Boy. I wouldn't think either of those two would want to work with each other. That's weird. We also have a 12-rounder heavyweight fight between a couple guys with one loss each for the BC-US-NBC heavyweight title. Eric Molina, who's 17-1 with 13 knockouts, and Warren Browning, who's 14-1 with 9 knockouts and 1. And then a 10-round bantamweight fight between Eric Morrell, 44-2 with 22 knockouts, and Daniel Cavedo, who's 13-11 with 2 draws and 8 knockouts. And one more fight we ought to mention here. Luis Ramos Jr. at light welterweight is fighting a 10-rounder with David Rodella. Ramos Jr. is 19-0 with 8 knockouts. Rodella is 15-4 with 6 knockouts and 3 draws. And there's even a fight in your favorite town of Pittsburgh this weekend, put on by Roy Jones Jr. The main event's a super featherweight 8-rounder between Monty Meza Clay, 30 wins, 3 losses, 20 knockouts. And he's fighting Carlos Rivera, who's 16-9 and 5 knockouts and 2 draws. And it looks like he's on a losing streak. Then we have a cruiserweight fight between Andres Taylor, 18-1. 7 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Mike Alderete, 7-5, with 3 knockouts, 2 draws. That's really it for that card there. Jermaine Taylor is fighting in Little Rock, Arkansas this weekend, so Saturday. At middleweight, Jermaine Taylor, 28-4 with 17 knockouts, one draw, fighting TBA. So I don't know if that's real or not. Don't know much about that one, what's going on there. But apparently, Boxrec decided to take me to his page. Bad Intentions, says Alias. I didn't know that. His last fight was a Super 6 tournament. Against Arthur Abraham. Back in 2009. It's hard to believe it's that long. TBA is his next opponent. Total badass.
That's not really what it means.
Let's see what else we got. Much jumping out here.
Hey, Rick, can you do me a favor? You know, Boxer, can you look at Friday, the night and tell me what the Friday night fight is?
What the Friday night fight is?
Yeah. Well, I'll have to look on Boxer. I don't know. Yeah,
I'm Boxer here. Last Friday of the week, I want to mention to you that is next Thursday from Poland, believe it or not.
Are you going?
No, I'm not going to be there. But it's a cruiserweight 10-rounder between Krzysztof Głowacki, 12-0 with 7 knockouts, and Roman Krajcik, who's 32-6 with 18 knockouts and 1 draw. I got to do the show. There's no way I can be there.
Oh, yeah, right.
Take the show on the road to Poland. I don't have a passport. Not going to do it. All right, it's Friday here. Just looking for the ESPN tag. Matthew Hatton is fighting next Friday in the UK, fighting a guy who's undefeated, Andre Abramenka, 15-0, 3 knockouts and 2 draws for the vacant IBF International welterweight title. And Hatton is 41-5-2 with Cena knockouts. Still looking for the ESPN. Dominic Gwynn is fighting next Friday in Delaware. Also fighting an undefeated guy, Amir Mansour, 14-0 with 11 knockouts. Gwynn is 33-7, 22 knockouts and 1 draw.
I saw Gwynn fight live on the Guy Ward undercard. He knocked Michael Grant, former heavyweight title challenger, out cold. Wow, I mean, he beat the crap out of him. So this Amir, I haven't had a chance to see him fight yet, but I've read some pretty good things. The one fight journalist that I know that when I was speaking about early Manny Pacquiao was speaking of Mansour, and you know, there was one article compared to that verse. I don't know if that's a stretch of the imagination or not, but it well could be. It could be interesting. Anytime you get a guy looking crowd.
Right. Well, ESPN2 Friday Night Fights next week are coming from Hammond, Indiana, the Horseshoe Casino. And it's going to be your boy, Hank Lundy, 20-1, 10 knockouts,
fighting David Diaz, 36-3, with 17 knockouts and one knock at lightweight. And Grady is also on the card. It's a light middleweight. He's fighting Demetrius Andrade, 13-0 with 9 knockouts. Brewer is 28-12 with 16 knockouts. Famous for his performance there on the contender. So a good Friday night fights for next week. So I read something today about the announcer for those Friday night fights is actually from Hammond, Indiana. He's going to have a homecoming. There's a blog on our site about that today. But it's about that time to get on the horn with Houston Alexander. So let's get him on the phone. And you have to ask at least one question, Tony. I know you're going to want to sit there and watch the Eagles for the whole interview. But I hold you to one question, at least. At least. You can ask two if you really want. All right, Houston. It's hard to believe he's 12-6. I would have thought he had a lot more fights.
Hello.
Hello, Houston.
Hey.
Hey, this is Rambler Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
I can't hear you, brother.
This is Rambler Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. Can you hear us?
Nice to meet you, brother. What's up?
We got Tony the Tornado on the line with us. And
hey, what's up? What's going on?
Not much. Probably more going on. You got a big fight this weekend, right?
Yeah, I got a big fight coming up this Saturday, man, with Razak.
And what do you know about this guy?
Razak is around it. Razak is here. What do you think of the missus? Oh, you're around the guy, man.
And I actually got to witness one of your fights back in 2007, UFC 78. I was there in the audience in New Jersey.
Oh, no, what was that at?
New Jersey. Thiago Silva was your
opponent. Oh, Jersey? Yeah. Well, Jersey. And you have to break it up with a bad man.
Oh, so.
You guys on a phone?
We're on a speakerphone here. Set up, so.
Oh, okay, your speakerphone is breaking up.
All
right. Rich, I'm having a hard time. I mean, I can hear you, but
you,
I can't.
You guys on side? You guys on side? You guys on side? Call me back.
Just give you a call right back. Hopefully that'll cure everything.
You guys on side? Call me back.
Yeah. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, because I can't hear a word he's saying. I heard call me back, though.
Hello?
How's that? Any better?
Yeah, this is a lot better right there.
All right. Yeah, so it was CD78. That's the fight that I fight for.
It was 78. The 78 was kind of weird, man. It was kind of a transition period. But yeah, it was kind of weird with that fight.
And then you had the pleasure of fighting Kimbo, guy we've always liked to talk about. But I think he kind of got...
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, go ahead. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Yeah.
Are you, I mean, you guys are still breaking up, brother.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, man, you guys are still breaking up.
But, can you hear us any better now?
I'm still breaking up, man. I'm still breaking up.
The connection between you and Houston is...
Can you call me from a landline?
This is the only line we can call you from. I know we can hear you.
Okay. You're fine, but you guys are breaking up. On my end, you guys are breaking up.
Okay. Best we can.
Okay, call another phone. Let's see if it's my phone or if it's that. They call this phone right here. It's 602-434-505. Right, they call that number. Let's just make sure it's not my phone. But you guys are breaking up pretty bad on the end.
5055,
Sid? Okay. What was it again?
5055.
Let's go through.
434-5055.
All right,
let me try that out.
All right, try that.
Bye. Technical difficulties. How is Eagles doing there? Last I checked, the Patriots were winning 16-9. Sounds like a preseason score to me. Well, I didn't think we were going to be seeing Houston. We have a problem.
Please leave your name.
Hi, it's Houston there.
Hang on just a second. clear on here.
That sounds clear.
Hello.
Hey, that sounds much better, right?
Hey, brother, what's up?
All right. Good. So tell us a little bit about this circuit you're fighting in this weekend.
I believe it's the first pay-per-view they have out of Mexico, especially with Turkey, where you got all these fighters from all over the world coming to. So I think this is the first event that they're doing. And it's the first pay-per-view, so I'm glad to be part of it, brother.
All right. And what would you say is their best moment so far?
What was that, Adrian?
What would you say has been the best moment in the sport for you so far?
There's a fight where I was in MMA. It's not even on the national scene. It was actually a fight where in Des Moines, Iowa, where I actually threw the rain, a couple of the boards in the rain. So that was one of my shining moments in MMA.
Pretty nuts. I actually went to a fight in Des Moines. Back in 2006, I think. And there was a guy named Mike Van Meer. They called him the Minivan. And he got picked up, and they didn't lock the cage door. So the cage door got picked up and thrown outside the cage, down a flight of steps, and landed on his back. And he got it and won the fight.
That's pretty MMA right there.
Yeah. That was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And he beat a guy really muscled up, too. And he was like a short, fat guy. I couldn't fight at all. It was impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy. But the event this Saturday, man, is actually has a pretty good card and everything with Jen Pulver. You got Ox. You got a really great card to put together.
Awesome. Favorite style or submission that you like, or favorite punch or anything?
That I like?
Yeah.
Oh man, you like because the knees are very effective. So I think my favorite, one of my favorite moves are the knee.
Mm-hmm. And what's it been after UFC? Has it been easy to find fights in different circuits? Is there any circuit that you'd like to get into and stick to?
No, it's actually been pretty easy. We're just looking for quality of opponents. And until we get to, you know, to show like the UFC, you know, we've had great opponents. We've been on a regular basis. So we're not worried too much about where we fight. As long as the opponent is someone that the fans want to see.
All right. And if you had to pick one guy out of all your opponents, who would you say was the toughest guy you've ever faced?
Oh, man. Out of opponents, there was a guy from Minnesota again. Maybe some years ago. That was a guy from Minnesota, the toughest guy I ever met in the ring. And because we went three rounds with this guy, all he did was hug me. And the guy that's hugging you the whole entire match, and you can't really do nothing. Yeah, that was a crazy match.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do? What do you think is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing is conditioning. If your conditioning is correct, don't worry about anything else in the fight, but your conditioning. So I think conditioning is the most important thing to get ready for the fight. Conditioning, conditioning, conditioning.
And have you seen?
Yeah, we were getting ready to get in there and do the battle. I mean, do you try to develop a specific game plan? Tell us about your. Or do you try to do your best and, you know, force the fight, you know, be
Could you repeat the question, Mark?
Sure. When you're getting ready to have a fight, you try to pattern your game plan to counteract what your opponent is, usually does. Do what you do for that match and let that pay for the fight.
You know, I'm glad you better.
Rich, did you hear the question?
Say what's that?
I think you heard it at that time, but your phone actually was breaking it.
I was breaking up, so maybe you can try one more time. All right.
Yeah, now.
Can you hear me now?
Now you're fine. So he was just asking.
Okay, well,
he was just asking, is your game plan set when you go in there, or do you work around the whatever your opponent does?
You know, I'm not worried about what your opponent does. The opponent's not worried about what I'm not worried about. I'm just going to get on me being aggressive and working my game plan. I'm not worried about it.
Cool. And as far as out there, it's, in your division, is there any specific opponent that you'd like to fight?
No, I would love to have another shot at Kimbo. Of course, I don't think he's fighting anymore, but I would love to have another shot at any of the guys I've loved. You know, just to go back and show, you know, the fighting audience that I'm a lot better than I was some years ago.
I think with Kimbo, they ended up exposing the fact that he had the bad knee on the Ultimate Fighter. So he ended up deciding that he'd be better off in boxing because nobody could get knee over and over again, which is what contributed to a lot of his losses.
I don't think he fought as much. First, like, you know, to be honest, I think he should just hang that up.
Yeah. Well, he's a boxing match this Saturday, I think, is his first boxing match in his debut. And
good luck to him.
So if you want to put on some gloves, you might be able to get your rematch.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting fight, I think, because he's actually starting with as a guy who's like 0-1 or something like that. So he's like starting from the bottom there, which might be better off for him because I think he was always more of a boxer anyway. And
maybe so.
There was all that too, where they wanted the fight put on the feet when Ken Shay fell apart there, and he ended up going against that Petruzzelli dude.
Yeah. So anybody that kicks or takes him down, it's a wrap. So maybe he's where he needs to be.
Yeah. Throw some low blows at the knee, and he's in trouble.
Oh yeah.
Getting back to you, what would you say has been the best moment for you in the sport?
The best moment for me in the sport. The best moment for me in the sport has to be the Keith Jardine the situation where we came in as the underdogs and actually came out on top. So yeah, I think the Jardine situation was probably better part of his career.
All right. And what did you think about being involved with the UFC? Was there a lot of controversy that you had to deal with? Did you like the management style? What was the good, the bad, and the ugly of being in the league there?
I've been involved with UFC. It was a pretty good experience, man. So, you know, again, that's where you want to be. That's where you want to be. The epitome of MMA. So that's where you want to be as far as it works. So everything was fine with me except for the fact that, you know, you have to make sure you win to be a part of that situation.
Yeah, it seems too, though, like, you know, I've noticed a lot of differences in the way they treat certain people. You know, if you have...
If you're winning, you're fine.
Right, but sometimes people, they're favored. So if they lose, you know, two or three fights in a row, they stick around while somebody else who isn't so favored does the same thing, has the same bad decisions or whatever, bad luck, and they get capped. You know, I noticed...
It all depends on how lucky the guy is.
Yeah, a lot of it's politics. I know that the guy that's fighting this weekend, Dan Hardy, he's lost three in a row, and they actually have a phrase, the rule, that a lot of the MMA reporters use to describe how these...
It might be some favoritism, but, you know, it just all depends on how much they invested in the person.
That's it. But what do you enjoy most about mixed martial arts, getting in the cage and fighting?
What I enjoy the most about mixed martial arts is that there's a discipline. It's always a discipline. So, you know, it's one thing. With discipline, it disciplines your life. It disciplines your mind state. Discipline is the greatest part of it in there.
What do you do outside the cage?
I do a variety of things. Now, I work with a family services, with the fatherhood program. I'm on air. I'm on air with Radio Omaha. Also, I'm doing a school program with all the different elementaries, middle school, high schools. I'm so busy, man. But fellas, I have to go. So in closing, I want to tell everybody out to, you know, check out the pay-per-view this Saturday, man, because, you know, we got a great card. Well, Zach and I go on Saturday, man, on pay-per-view. So we just want all the fans, if you want to check out a great fight with myself and Zach, you can tune into the pay-per-view in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All right. Well, we definitely wish you all the best. It was great chatting with you. And does anyone shout out to or say hello to before we go?
Yeah, man, but shout out to our family, friends, and all the sponsors of this day. We need to check out HoustonAlexander.com, follow me on Twitter, and on Facebook, because on the Twitter, it's actually me.
All right. Sounds good.
I appreciate it, fellas. Thanks.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Good luck to you.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
How did I do, Rich?
You got your one quota question.
Well, I was having a really, really hard time hearing him.
Yeah.
When he first got on, I could hear you perfect, but his sounded like almost like he was underwater.
Mm-hmm.
I knew we were having a pretty bad connection. And then even though when I was trying to ask questions, like the one question that I asked, or even when I was saying something like, hey, I can hear you, can you guys hear me? It was like I was getting an echo.
Yeah, he was breaking up a little bit there for a second, too, on the good phone. So, hey, what can you do? We made the best of it. Made it work. He wasn't one of our most talkative guests anyway, so. Would have had to come up with about questions to keep him there for the rest of the time. I think we kind of exhausted everything there. We went through all the box news. We did the whole schedule for this weekend and even up to next Friday. So, I don't know. It's probably a good night to end it early here and get to watching some football, I guess.
New
England's up 26-9. He's up 13-3.
Yep, I'm watching that now. They just got a first down. I'm going to the Phillies game on Saturday, so that should be fun. Taking some of my friends of mine that I grew up with. It'll be cool.
All right. Well, actually, I was given the opportunity to see that new movie, Warrior, about the two brothers who are MMA fighters. And
I want to go see Final Destination 5.
One of those guys who likes those movies, huh?
I love
them. I don't know. I never got really too far into those, but anyway. Yeah, the Warrior movie was supposed to screen tonight in Vegas, but it starts right at 7, and this show usually ends at 7, so there wouldn't have been any way I would have got there in time, but I don't know, we were going short with Houston. I would have tried to get there. But now I have to end the show early, and we're ending early. But they're trying to hook me up with next week, showing next week. Maybe it'll be before the show, maybe afterwards. But I'll have, either way, I'll have a review for everybody the next show afterwards. So we'll talk about that. We'll cover the UFC Live 5 results next week, and we'll talk about some boxing results and future fights and all that jazz. And till then, thanks for stopping by and listening, and thanks, Tony, for tuning in yourself.
Always see you here.
Alrighty.
Alright, see you later.
Adios.